I mean, our bread wheat is the result of breeding for 10,000 years. But he was not scared by this, because he said, if the goal of your life can be accomplished in your lifetime, then you are not dreaming big enough. But we think it's too slow.
Hello, and welcome back to The Food Fix, the show where we talk to all kinds of folks about innovative ways to better feed the world. It's me, Cassidy Huff, and this week we are talking about something huge, okay? It's a project that has been going on for over 50 years already that could be going on for another, like, 10,000 if it weren't for the super fancy gene editing technology that we have today. Perennial grains, baby. I know it doesn't sound like much, but my roommates have been victim to my rants for the past couple of weeks, and I'd like to think that I got them at least moderately interested. But now that I've had time to give the topic my full attention, I'm going to get you guys hooked on perennial grains by the end of this episode. There's just so many fun things that we're going to learn today. But let's start 10,000 to 12,000 years ago during the first agricultural revolution, or the Neolithic era, in the Fertile Crescent, which is that moon-shaped piece of land in the Middle East that you probably heard about a million times in school but never really paid attention to. But it's important, so listen up. So this was when humans decided that we didn't want to keep following our food around. Lots of commute involved with hunting and gathering. Gas prices were through the roof. It was a nightmare. Just kidding. But anyways, we decided to invent farming. So to do that, we took seeds from the plants that we really liked and we intentionally planted them all in one spot. And this was when we decided to settle down and build houses and villages and stuff. Pretty cool, right? It was like the beginning of everything. You like your little college town? Well, yeah, think whoever dropped some wheat in the ground 10,000 years ago. Anyways, while farming these plants, which were mostly grains like wheat and barley, we began to domesticate them. So for example, wild wheat falls apart and scatters all over the ground so that when the wind blows it, it'll grow new little wheat plants all over. And that's great for wild plants because it's increasing its chances of reproductive success by spreading seeds everywhere. But as humans, we don't want that. We want to eat that wheat. So farmers decided to breed for wheat that stayed on the stem. So now, 10,000 years later, when you drive down the highway and you pass these beautiful fields of corn and wheat and straight rows, you don't see straight corn growing, you know, across the street, because they're not dropping their seeds like they used to, because we domesticated them. So, okay, I hope you enjoyed that little history lesson. It's very important for the rest of the episode. Moral of the story is it took us 10,000 years to do that. So now, we want to grow grains like wheat and barley that are perennial. Because right now they're all annual, which means every year we gotta rip them up and replant them, and that's a lot of work. And it's also not good for the environment. So 50 years ago at the Land Institute in Kansas, we started breeding, baby, but we don't have another 10,000 years to wait for this to happen naturally. So we took to science. Michael Palmgren is a super smart science guy who studies plant physiology at the University of Copenhagen in Denmark. And he's going to help us understand the importance of this transition into perennial grains and how we plan to do 10,000 years of work in hopefully less than 100. Let's go.
My name is Michael Palmgren, and I'm leading some projects where we try to make new crops for the future. Crops that are good for the environment. And so this is our dream, that we can make a sustainable agriculture for the future.
Okay, so define the terms annual and perennial for us. And are grain crops like wheat and barley and corn annuals or perennials?
An annual is a plant that lives 1 year only. You plant it in the spring, and it matures during summer, and it dies in the autumn. A perennial lives year after year. So if you take grasses, about half of all grasses are annual, and about half of all grasses are perennial. Those, we have grasses that grow in a park, the grass lawn, are perennial grasses. You sow them one time and then they are there. But all our grain crops are grasses that are annual. So barley is an annual grass. Rice is an annual grass. Maize, corn is annual grass. All our grain crops are derived from grasses that are annuals, even though half of all grasses are perennials.
So why aren't we satisfied with leaving these grains annual? I mean, obviously, it's a lot of work to rip up fields every year and plant everything again, and that's all very time consuming. But from a sustainability standpoint, why are perennials better?
The problem with annual agriculture is that it is destructive. So when you plow and do tilling, you turn the soil around. Yeah. When you expose the soil, make it naked, it can no longer hold on nutrients. If on the contrary, a perennial grass has long, deep root systems, this huge mass of roots in the soil that you have when you grow perennial grasses is a way of storing carbon. When you do tilling, on the opposite, with annual crops, you all the time release all the CO2 again that has been taken up. So there are very many benefits from growing a perennial in terms of sustainability.
Okay, guys, you got that? Super important stuff here. Remember in science class when you learned about photosynthesis, where plants suck carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere, and that's why planting trees is a good way to combat climate change? Well, yeah, same principle applies here. Perennials hold a lot more carbon than annuals because they've got big old roots. And every year when we rip all the annuals up, we're re-releasing all that carbon back into the atmosphere. And also, we're damaging the microbiome, which is all that good bacteria in the soil that makes our plants grow. Imagine if a hurricane came and wiped out your town every year. You'd have a year to rebuild it before another hurricane hits, so the town would never really get the chance to become well-developed. But if nothing disturbed your town for, say, 10 years, then it would be beautiful, with a thriving economy, probably like nice farmers markets and pretty murals everywhere. That's what's going on in the soil. So if we had more perennial crops, then we would have more happy, healthy, thriving little soil microbiome towns. Okay, anywho, so we want to domesticate perennial grains. What does that mean?
Domesticate means to turn it from a wild plant that works for its own purpose to a plant that works for our purpose. From what we know about domestication of other grain crops is that we don't need new genes. It's loss of function that often is connected to domestication.
Okay, buckle up, because Michael is about to explain crop domestication in a super cool way.
I can give an example from a completely different world. If you domesticate a wolf, you will find it unpleasant that it is very aggressive. So you select progeny of wolves that are less aggressive until you end up with a wolf that is not aggressive at all. This wolf can no longer survive in nature, but doesn't matter because now you take care of it. By not being aggressive, the wolf has lost an ability to survive in nature that is required for survival in nature. So one example then with grain crops is when a grass gets mature, it drops its seeds to the ground. This is quite natural because otherwise it would never be able to reach the ground. And this means that our ancestors, very long time ago, 10,000 years ago, they had to lie on their knees to pick up grains, like trying to harvest dandelions, mature dandelions. Yeah, that would be difficult. Yeah, so all annual grasses we grow, they have lost their ability to disperse their grains. And this is one reason when you drive in the countryside along fields, you never see them migrating into the roadside. They just stand there with their grains that they cannot disperse. So the first thing we would like to do, one would like to do when you want to domesticate a perennial grass, is to see if you cannot get it to hold its grains. Then you have already increased yield a lot.
Okay, so kind of like I explained at the beginning, but cooler. If we wanted to domesticate a wolf, we would keep breeding the tamest one from every pack until we had what we wanted. We did that for annual grains. They are domesticated. That's why they grow in fields so nicely and don't blow across the road and start growing there. They don't drop their seeds. So now we want to do that same thing, but for perennial grasses. The hot one right now is intermediate wheat grass, which is like a perennial cousin of wheat. Right now it's still wild and blowing its seeds all over, but if we can domesticate it and make it keep its seeds like we did with annual grains, then hopefully one day we will have big fields of intermediate wheatgrass like we do with regular wheat now. Except this one will live on for years. It's cool, you guys. Okay, anyways.
We have 20,000 different genes. Intermediate wheatgrass has about 120,000. It's much more complicated than we are. It has six times more genes. So the hypothesis is that if we can disturb them in some way, then it will lose the ability to lose its grains like all the other grasses.
Okay, GMO police, if you were listening there, you're probably settling up right now. He said, if we can disturb the genes in intermediate wheatgrass in some way, then we can domesticate them. Sounds like a GMO in the making, right? Wrong. Let's go on.
But this is non-GMO. This doesn't involve any genetic engineering. We don't add anything new. You cannot make a mutation by CRISPR that couldn't have happened by accident in nature by itself.
You didn't think I was just going to slip CRISPR into this episode without breaking it down for you, did you? No, come on. CRISPR is what's going to make all this happen, and it's awesome. Okay, so CRISPR, spelled C-R-I-S-P-R, is a gene editing tool that can cut through DNA at super precise locations so that you can add stuff or take stuff out that you don't want. But since we're not adding anything here, we're just taking away the ability to disperse seeds, it's not a GMO. So stand down. So boom, okay, we are rocking and rolling with perennial grains, but what about perennial everything? Is perennializing the future of agriculture? Could we do it with everything?
I think it can be applied to much more than grains, and I think it has to be the future of agriculture. I think it's urgently required a perennial revolution in agriculture because soil quality is degrading. I mean, soil erosion is increasing, and this doesn't fit with increased populations.
And what are the challenges with this transition to perennial agriculture?
First thing is that there is a scientific challenge in making the perennial grasses produce the same yield as annuals. So there's a scientific challenge. But then there's also another challenge. I think the agrochemical industry lives from selling seeds or grains that to be sown every year. If you get stable ecosystems that produce food, the need for seeds will decrease enormously. Ones who benefit, not only the environment will benefit from this, but the farmers will benefit from it. But there is a very big agrochemical industry that will not benefit from it.
Big Seed is not going to be happy about this, but alas, if we stay on track and continue to use our fancy CRISPR technology to make perennial grains, when can we expect to start growing them on a large scale?
Our goal is to, in less than 10 years, to have plants with a reasonable yield. But we will not have fields in 10 years.
All right. Guys, are you as stoked as I am? Probably not, but hopefully, at least, you've learned something. It was a dense one, I know, but I think it was really important. I mean, I told you all about the history of agriculture and the future of it, all in like 15 minutes. I don't know. And I even bought sound effects for it. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. We're moving on up, baby. You're welcome. Thank you so much, Michael, for the very in-depth interview. I hope I did the topic justice. I'll link the paper I referenced in the episode description in case anybody else caught the perennial bug. Please leave me a good review on Spotify, you guys, or Apple Podcasts, whatever. I just put in a lot of work on this episode, and I know you learned at least one thing. Oh, also, the Twitter is active. Go talk to me at MSU Food Fix. Tell me what you learned and stuff. Thank you, Night Center, for paying me money. And thank you, Freezer Bees, for holding it down every episode. Check out the Freezer Bees music. Oh, and also, email me episode ideas at msufoodfix@gmail.com. Okay, goodbye, my friends. See you next week. Spread the word about perennials. My name is Cassidy Huff. Good night, Mic Drop.